the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry. As always, we are excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest news, scores, stories, and more. If you subscribe today, you can use Podcast 20, that's PODCAST 20, for 20% off an annual subscription. We are excited for today's new episode that features Jamie Pinkerton from Iowa State. Welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast, our Christmas week episode. Ree, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Counting down the days till Santa visits, you know, got a little bit of a, some sort of, you know, sinus thing going on, which isn't helping me be, but I'm still in the Christmas spirit, still trying to be very, you know, festive, I guess you could say. So yeah, how are you doing?
I'm good. Speaking of Christmas spirit, I actually just got my Christmas lights up yesterday, which would have been the 21st. I was scheduled to be in Western Africa doing some work, but so I wasn't really planning on having lights, and I couldn't find lights anywhere because everybody was sold out. So finally, I got lights delivered and put them up last night, listening to Christmas movie or music, watched some Christmas movies with friends. And so it's getting quite festive here, and we're at a whopping, I want to say, 50 degrees here on the West Coast. So it's getting...
Wow, for you, that's chilly. Wow, that's like Arctic over there.
Arctic.
That's great. You've got more lights than me. I should, to be honest, my neighbors have like, honestly, a winter wonderland of like those blow up things. I mean, it's like, and they have music and they have lights. So it like shines into my house, like into my bedroom. So I feel like I'm just kind of like radiating their Christmas joy. So I don't even have to, because it lights up my house. So I didn't do my own, but they do enough for me. Like I just stare out there and I get the Christmas spirit. So good for you though.
It was pretty aggressive, but I got it done. I had to put hooks up and everything, but all good. And even a Christmas tree. So Christmas spirit over here, over in California. But even though it is Christmas week, we've had some pretty big news drop in the softball world. I wouldn't have thought it, but first off, let's start with AU, big news Tuesday morning, was it? Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, they announced some pretty big news. Ree, what do you got on Athletes Unlimited for the
summer? Yeah, well, they're expanding and they're given like extended contracts. So first, it's they're going into the third season. And the big news yesterday was they're going to give players two-year contracts now. They were just going season to season. So 15 players will be receiving two-year contracts. Rachel Garcia and Sierra Romero are joining Athletes Unlimited. They are announced those joining, and they are going to have an additional event now in the, alongside the season. It's going to be right after the Women's College World Series. So June 13th through 26th, it's called AUX Softball. It's to coincide with the 50th anniversary of Title IX. They kind of released this 42 players, 18 games to kind of piggyback off the momentum that the college season generates. And it will be at a location still to be announced. It will be separate from where the regular season will be played, which is in Rosemont, Illinois. Again, that will be July 29th through August 28th. That has 60 players. But the new event is June 13th through the 26th, 42 players, 18 games, plus the two-year contracts. Just a lot of news all in one drop yesterday. Like they teased it and they weren't joking. It was a lot. But great news. I mean, that obviously shows that they're on solid standing, that they've had, you know, you don't drop to your contracts unless you feel financially secure in some sense. So that's a good positive thing. They've been announcing, you know, endorsements over the years and sponsors. So, it's cool, more softball, and we get some, you know, Rachel, we were wondering if she would join, but after the Olympic year, which rightfully so, that's a lot of softball to be played all in once. So I could see her taking a break. So it's great to have her joining Athletes Unlimited, but just a lot of happy news for Athletes Unlimited yesterday.
And, you know, it was a part of it I actually missed was maybe they just announced it a little bit later. It was in the release about the two-year contracts, but that's huge for our sport, having the ability for players to know that not only are they going to be able to play this year as a professional, but those 2-year contracts, I think a collective sigh of relief. Now we're looking at what, $20,000 a year in pay for at the most, I would say.
But, you know, I mean, you're playing a month, so that's not bad. $20,000 for a month, that's pretty good. I'll take that job. You know, I mean, I'll do that.
In a sport where historically, I don't know if how much, you know, on average players have been played. So I think it's a step in the right direction. And, you know, we're still not obviously where Major League Baseball is, but we've got to build it. So I think this is where we're building the stepping stones needed to be successful. And I think AU has proven that they want to be in the space, that they appreciate the space, and they're supporting women's sports left and right. I mean, and they just had basketball as well in Vegas, right?
Yeah, basketball or in volleyball, they already had lacrosse, they already have. They're adding basketball. They just had tryouts for basketball, which is going to be in the offseason of the WNBA, which is a great thing, kind of almost like a feeder, you know, like so people don't have to always go overseas to keep making money, which is great. Yeah, it's his baby steps. I mean, the WNBA, you know, look how we consider that such a longstanding league, and there's still miles to go to catch up to, you know, to where they want to be. So this is, you know, we have to be patient. And the good thing is they're hitting it the sweet spot. Women's sports are getting more attention. There's more sponsors that are realizing that they need to like get on board. And it's not just because it's a good thing to do, it's because it's a smart business thing to do. And so softball's, I mean, it's great. This is, I think this is starting at just the right time. And we see what the college game can do. And if they can try to piggyback off that as much as possible, it would be great. And I think that's smart to do it right after the Women's College World Series to kind of keep that momentum going and then hook people for the rest of the summer. So we'll see how it is. I mean, you can never, we've seen leagues come and go in all sports for women. So you never say, you know, it's for sure, but this is positive momentum and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. It has, I mean, AU, it's been a positive experience. And I think the most interesting question I think on everybody's minds is how's this going to work with the WPF and how are the two, are they going to be able to work together and what is that going to entail in terms of the professional leagues that are now available to softball athletes?
Yeah. And seeing how that's, we still have to find out more about that. Obviously that was kind of dropped, but haven't heard much since, but definitely we do need it. You know, we need more something. This is a great start. Athletes Unlimited. It's not like it's a, you know, more like we were saying, kind of like fantasy league in a way. It'd be good to have like a solid league with teams that are, and so if they can complement each other, that would be great. I would really, you know, it's kind of like the WNBA and Athletes Unlimited is trying to do. If we could get that same model with softball, it would be ideal.
Yeah, so that's the pro news of the week. We also had a big time donor at UCLA softball, Shelly Carlin, former UCLA softball player, a donator, commit to $1 million dollars. Bree, do you have anything out on Shelly Carlin?
Yeah, that was announced yesterday too. It's like a lot. It's great, man. It's like, hey, softball, and the more financial stuff we can get involved in softball, it's great. She donated $1 million to endow the head softball coaching position. So forever now, whoever the head coach is will be called the Shelly Carlin head coach. There's a lot of schools that have done this, and I have, like, Stanford does it for a lot of football, and I always want to write like that whole title instead of head coach. I just want to write like the Shelly Carlin head coach, Kelly, you know, like anyway, Perez. So I don't think we'll be doing that. We'll probably just say UCLA head coach, but it's an endowed, it's the largest gift ever by a former UCLA female student athlete. So 1 million is the largest ever. Hopefully that can, you know, set an example and others can follow. And it's part of the UCLA is launching the Women of Westwood to celebrate that 50th anniversary of Title IX, which you're going to be seeing a lot of these things across the country, a lot of sports, a lot of coinciding with that anniversary, which is great. Carlin was on the 1982 national championship team for UCLA. And she's not just donated to UCLA. She donated $500,000 to Cal State Bakersfield a few years ago to support their women's athletic program. So she is someone that we need in this space to help women's athletics, not just at her alma mater, but across the board. But the $1 million, that's huge. And that's a great thing. And that's going to make sure that that head coaching position is endowed for, you know, for as long as it can be. So $1 million, that's great. Kudos to her. And we need more like her.
Yeah. So we will actually have Shelly Carlin and Kelly Inouye Perez in a special video interview on d1softball.com. So stay tuned for that. We'll have them explain what the Women of Westwood are, and we'll talk a little bit to Shelly and Kelly about how that is going to impact the lives of the student athletes at UCLA. And so that's the news for the week, and we got our fall reports up. We had Michigan State and Jackie Joseph, super excited about her squad. She's so funny. She's so real. She said, you know, any coach that tells you that they love their squad every year is lying to you. She goes, but I could tell you this year, I love my squad. So it was just great to sit down and chat with her. And, you know, she talked a little bit about how the Big Ten took a hit in terms of the national seedings last year and the RPI. And, you know, she's always honest, and I really enjoyed talking to her. So that's up on the site. Take a look at the Spartans or Michigan State. And then Ree had two big ones up again this week with Alabama and Florida State. What do you got, Ree, on Bama and Florida State?
Yeah, I talked to, you know, Saban kind of ended with some of the College World Series teams from last year. Alabama, Patrick Murphy, head coach, thinks it's his most athletic team he's had, which is saying a lot. You know, he's got a, obviously when you got Montana Fouts back in the circle, that's a great place to start, but they do have to fill some holes. I mean, they do have to, with, you know, Bailey Hampill leaving and some key pieces, but Bailey Dowling will be back. You know, remember she was off to a pretty hot start and then tore her ACL. So she'll be back in the loop, and got some really talented freshmen coming in. A lot of, you know, I think like everyone was like a Gatorade State Player of the Year from some state. I was like, gosh, like, and he was telling me that it didn't even include, like, most coaches were like, did you leave any for us? Like, coming up to him in the off season. So he's very excited. You know, obviously their goal is to make it and go all the way this time, because that's the goal at Alabama all the time. And they're trying to set the season ticket record with 3,200 they want to get. And they were at 3,100. When season got canceled in 2020, so they had to refund everyone. So they're hoping that they can, you know, everyone's going to be clamoring to get back, you know, fingers crossed with this new COVID variant now. It's we're seeing with basketball season, it's not going well so far, but hopeful by then, you know, it'll calm down. So that's, yeah, Alabama's very excited about what they have coming back, as they always should be. And really, you know, with Lexi Kilfoyle too, their pitcher, they want to get her in, you know, on offense more. And that's a big goal for them. She's got a big bat, and he's really high on her hitting more. So look for that too.
So that's Alabama. And then we've got Florida State up on the site as well. Lonnie Alameda down there, runners up last year. They were a fun team to watch. I mean, in preseason and conference play, offense was difficult to watch, but they found a way to get it done last year and ended up in that championship final, which Ree and I, we got to see. And what do you got, Ree, on the Florida State Seminoles?
Yeah, they got obviously Sydney Sherrill back at third, you know, All-American. Sandra Cock in the circle, which is key. She's been a revelation out there. And she's, you know, I'm one of the best pitchers in the country. So having her in there, and they've got some transfers that are coming in too, that are going to be pretty, like Mac Leonard, who we've written about and heard about from Illinois State, you know, pitcher slash utility, really good hitter. Interesting to me too, they have Allie DuBois from Boston University, but she's going to redshirt this year. She's and it's interesting from a graduate senior, but she knows that she may be more needed, like, and she wants to like take her time and learn under them, which I thought is a very mature, you know, because that's a hard thing to do when you're that age. Like, let's, you know, redshirt when I'm like in my fifth year, like that's crazy. But so that was interesting. Like, she won't be there this year. She will be there, but she won't be on the roster. But got a huge roster there too, Lonnie was saying. And so she's gonna have to balance that and manage that. They kind of had their, you know, for them, struggles a little bit last year, but the ACC is a lot tougher. So they didn't win the regular season title or the tournament title, and they still went to the, which says a lot about the ACC, and that's a good thing. She's still trying to figure out everyone's role. She's got a lot of people and a lot of places she can play them. But when you have a player like we were saying, I kind of, you got an ace, you know, you have an ace, that's a good way to build around. So she's pretty, pretty excited about what she's got.
That's Lonnie Alameda and the Florida State Seminoles fall report up on the site. I don't know, over to d1softball.com. And without further ado, Ree, we're going to introduce our guest of the week from Iowa State, Jamie Pinkerton. What do you got?
Yeah, it was fun to talk to Jamie. We learned a lot about him. I mean, kind of a non-traditional way into coaching, which you'll hear about. Just a lot about him as a passion for the sport, how he got into it.
We are now joined on the D1 Softball podcast by Iowa State head coach Jamie Pinkerton.
Enjoyed speaking to him. Pinkerton is entering his fifth season as the head coach of Iowa State. We could have had him forever. So I think
Cyclones reached the NCAA tournament last season.
All right, here's Jamie Pinkerton from Iowa State.
And advanced to the regional championship for the first time in program history. Pinkerton recently agreed to a contract extension through 2025, coming off that great season. So this is one we wanted to have on for a long time. So thank you so much, Jamie, for joining us on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always fun to get on and talk softball, and especially Cyclone softball.
Yeah, well, we've been doing rolling out our fall reports here, kind of catching up with coaches in writing, but we always love to talk to them too. Now that your fall season's complete, was there anything that really stood out to you about this team, or something about, you know, the program over in general that's kind of been a theme for the fall for you guys?
Fall was really good for us. We obviously got a lot of things done that we needed to. It was definitely a different setting than what it was the previous fall in 2020, when we didn't get to play outside competition. The players weren't really able to go back and team bond in apartments and hang out and watch TV and movies and have dinners together. So I think that was a good, we didn't even really get to do that in the spring. As we know, we kind of kept a semi bubble, if you can keep a bubble, on public hotels and public flights. But it was good to get back to somewhat normal. We got a lot of things done that we needed to get done. But like what we saw in our team, obviously we have a lot returning from the regional team, but we have a couple of key pieces that are not in the program due to graduation. So it was good to go through the fall and see how we were going to manage that fall with the leadership vacuum of Sammy Williams and Logan Shaven graduating. So we had some people step up. I think there's still some work to be done on that front, but just from going out and playing and switching lineups, doing different combinations, doing different things with the hitting lineup, everything, I was really happy, and our staff was really happy with how the fall went.
Yeah, you mentioned Sammy, who we'd had on the podcast last season, and just thoroughly impressed. I mean, she had a better job than I've ever had, like, already, and she hadn't even graduated yet. She already had it lined up at Boeing. What is it like coaching a player like her, and kind of what did she bring to your program?
Well, first and foremost, what was really great about coaching Sammy was just the human being she was. I mean, before you start talking about the accolades as a player and All-American and All-Conference and everything, she was a gem of a human being. Always put other people in front of her, and she was selfless and was a great leader. Knew when to say something. Always, we're human, we make mistakes, but 99.9% of the time she made the right decisions and did the right things. Then you take what you said in the classroom with the COVID year, was able to leave here with a master's and get a great job. And actually she ended up not ending up at Boeing. She works for the Chicago Cubs. So she was able to get a software engineering job with in the analytics department with the Chicago Cubs. I'm really eager once she gets started learning what she's doing with the Cubs. But take that a step further, then, the type of player and leader she was on the field. I've said that she was a generational talent. I've been doing this 29 years, and I've only had a handful of players. And she, to be able to be a great human, a great student, and a great teammate and player, I haven't had very many of that. Players like that in my career. So it's just one of those things. We're not looking to replace her. We're looking how we're going to spread her production out throughout the lineup.
Yeah, that's one of those players. I don't think you always say, oh, who's going to fill the shoes? Like, there's no filling the shoes. It's just like we have to just kind of figure out, like you said, a new route, and definitely generational. It was cool to see, and it was great to bring a little publicity to more, to the program, which she did, just to her accolades. Yeah, you mentioned your 29 years. Now, you've been Tulsa, Louisiana, Monroe, Virginia, Arkansas, Montana, a few high school stops, a few travel ball stops on the way. How did you get into coaching, Jamie? What was your route to being a softball coach?
I got into it by mistake. I was an area sales manager at Coca-Cola, so I was in sales, so that kind of helped with recruiting. Obviously, and learning how to manage people, and I think that has boded well for me in coaching softball. I've always been the type of coach that I don't micromanage. I probably did a little bit early in my career, but I definitely don't now later in my career. But how I got into it is back in 1986, my sister wanted to pitch, and she was a first baseman. She ended up being the first signee ever at the University of Tulsa. So but she wasn't a pitcher, and she wanted to become a pitcher, and no one wanted to, you know, build a team around her. So we built a team around her, and she turned out to be a pretty good pitcher. So I started kind of in club ball, and then when I realized I had a passion for it and that I enjoyed coaching, I decided in middle management was cut in the 90s. We kind of had a recession like we did during COVID. And, you know, essentially I had an opportunity to go back to a route trek or leave middle management. And I took the severance pay and went back to school thinking, well, I'll go get a degree in education, secondary ed, become a high school coach. So that was the route. And I was sitting in, like my friend Andy there, I was an interning in the sports information department at the University of Tulsa, and Patty Holthouse, who was the head coach, walked in and said, I can't say what she said to me, but she said, what the heck are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm going to school and looking to become a teacher. I can teach high school and coach softball. And she said, my graduate assistant just left. Come see me. Well, back then the graduate assistant was the assistant coach because it was her and a student assistant. So I started off as an undergrad assistant, and they helped pay for my school. And that was in the fall of 94. And that's how my college career started. So, you know, I'm forever indebted to Patty for giving me that opportunity and the coaches along the line. But started off as a summer ball coach, found a passion for it, went back to school so I could make a living at it in the high school ranks. And you know, fate led me to where I am today.
So you were a sports info intern at how old? How old were you as a sports info?
Oh, no, I was non-traditional. I was a 28-year-old freshman. So yeah. I had been married. I had been married and had a baby. My wife had the baby, but we had a child, and she was a year or two old. So it was definitely a leap of faith. And getting into something and had a supportive family and definitely wife. I wouldn't, through all those moves, we've covered the U.S. The only time zone I haven't lived in is Pacific. So I don't think that'll ever happen now. Hope it doesn't. I'm very happy here. So, but that's kind of the story of how I got into coaching, and I haven't looked back and really enjoyed it. It's been a blessing, and to be able to go to work every day and have a job that you don't really call it a job. It's been blessed and been a lot of fun.
If people were to know, you know, maybe not familiar with you, Jamie, but if there was an overriding philosophy or something that you really value in terms of what you want your programs to stand for, what would that be?
Oh, I just think, I'll steal a line from our football coach. I just want our players to be the best version of themselves. And I think that's probably cliche now, but that's what I've always wanted. I want to empower young women to be able to go out. And I have a daughter that's a mechanical engineer. So I had a lot of practice before she finished school and got in, to try to empower her to be able to succeed in a male world, because she's definitely in it. She came to me one day and said that, I'm the only female in this mechanical engineering class. And I said, well, stand up for what you believe in, don't back down. And that's kind of, I had a lot of practice with coaching, young women and empowering them to be the best version of themselves going out. And my goal is with my daughter and with my players, I want to be able to mentor them and help them through, be able to get out and help them get a good degree in an area that they can go out and make a living and they can stand on their own two feet and not to have to worry about their parents, a husband, a significant other, partner, or whatever. Just be able to help them get into a position that they can be successful. And that's kind of the philosophy I've taken with our teams over the years. And it's been very enriching career for me, just to be able to see the success stories that we had from, you know, the first athletes I've coached to the likes of Logan Shaman and Sammy Williams that just left.
That's great. Well, that's props your daughter too. I read that. Yeah. And she's an Iowa State graduate too, mechanical engineering, right? So that's pretty legit.
Yeah. Just about to get promoted to Engineer 3 and get into management. So at 27 years old, to go out. And like I said, it's coaching these women athletes that helped me raise my own daughter. So not only have I been able to be a mentor and a coach to a lot of players, they've coached me along the way to help raise my kids properly.
That's great. Do you give us a little bit of your own athletic background? I mean, were you someone that, you know, it sounds like obviously your sister was into it, but what was your athletic background?
You know, I, coming out of high school, I played high school basketball and baseball, played American Legion. I was told I had some talent, but I mean, I was just raised in an era that my parents were able to provide, and, you know, I had clothes and food, but, you know, going somewhere and going to college right out of high school, I didn't do. That's why I said I didn't return to college until almost 10 years after I graduated. So I had to go out and get a job and kind of, you know, make my own way. So outside of, you know, I'm the older I get, the better I was, you know, one of those type of things. So, I mean, I don't know. I could sit here today and tell you that I played a little bit of men's fast pitch. It wasn't very good. You know, wasn't at a high level like a Mike White or a Mike Larrabee or Ken Erickson or things like that, but I played a little bit and had fun with it, but never played at a level, nor had the talent that the young women that I coach have. But you know, I try not to look back at that saying, well, what if I would have taken that JUCO offer I had in baseball, what could I've done with it? I try not to look back at that, and because hindsight's 20/20, but I probably wouldn't be where I am today if I would have done something like that. So I'll try not to ever question that, but I wouldn't call myself a talented athlete.
Well, hey, but you greatly contributed with your sister. That's pretty awesome, because obviously, you know, Title IX and everything and getting some of those programs up and running, it sounds like she was a part of that, you know, historical. So it's good you got into coaching early, it sounds like. So that's awesome. We discussed this with Sammy when she was on, and this shows me everyone's listening to the podcast. I'm a podcast fan. I cover all sports, not just softball. So I have a college football podcast I listen to that really pumps up the tap water in Ames. And I'm just wondering, Jamie, is it that good? Is the tap water? Cause apparently like there's a song about it and everything. How is the tap water in Ames? I have to ask every guest that's from Iowa State.
Well, I don't drink water, so I'm a Mountain Dew drinker, so which probably my kidneys are going to fail at some point. But from what I read and all the reports, I think I read that it's like top 10 in the country. You know, it doesn't smell, so that's a good thing. And then when I do drink tap water or water out of the filter, it's pretty good, but I usually have to have a lemon in it or something. But I've definitely been places where it doesn't taste as good as it does here. But if you caught me off guard with that one.
Well, I don't expect. I said I'm kind of a weird. Probably listen to a podcast, and I maybe your SIDs might know about it because it gets pretty much a lot of play. But they play this song. There's like this little song. If anyone wants to Google it, it's hilarious. It's kind of like, and it touts how good the tap water is and why everyone moves there for the tap water. So I always have to ask.
I don't know if everyone moves here. It's not a big metropolis like in LA, but I will say this, and people kind of, you name that list of places I've been, this is definitely, as an assistant, as a head coach, it's the favorite place I've lived. And people kind of raise an eyebrow when you start thinking about living in the Rockies and Missoula. And I lived just off the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains when I coached at Virginia. So, but just the people in the town. And if you read the articles, that's one of the claims to fame, is definitely the drinking water.
Okay. See, there you go. Well, we'll steer back to softball here, kind of off track, but you guys have a pretty pretty good schedule. Just everyone's releasing their schedules. Can you kind of give us an idea of how you went about constructing that and kind of some of the spots you'll hit this this season where we can try to find you?
Well, I'm coming off being on the national selection committee, sometimes hated, sometimes loved, depending on who you talk to. I learned a lot through that job, learned how to schedule, how not to schedule, what to look for. And, you know, it's hard to be precise with that because teams change from year to year, but definitely learned, you need to get a good cross section and setting that up. You need to play, some top 25s. You need to be really good in the 26 to 75 range. And then you need to try to, it's all right to play above the 75s, but you don't want to get in that fourth quadrant and lose over one or two games because, as I learned on the committee, you get into that fourth quadrant, you get dinged on that if you have some losses. But trying to, find a way to get into that schedule. Obviously the Big 12 is going to be probably very strong again this year. And then with the, we were invited to the Mary Nutter, which is a prestigious tournament. We drew a good, I feel like a good schedule there, playing UCLA and Washington. We play some Big 10 games throughout the season. Nebraska and Iowa come to mind. So when you kind of build that schedule and then you try to get the mid-majors that to get that opponent strength of schedule, you want to try to select those mid-majors that are going to be near above 500. So I don't think it's an exact science, but I've picked the brains of a lot of people, coaches, at how they build their schedule. And over the last course of the last two or three years that I've been on the committee, I really learned how to do that and try to set up our schedule to be able to do that. So is this a good byproduct, the schedule of what has been done? I think the last couple of years and this year I've been pretty intentional on our scheduling to try to get in a position, obviously, to be an at-large, because unless someone figures out how to unseat Oklahoma, we're going to have to try to be an at-large bid. So a lot of thought goes into it. I talk with my staff. We, try to be intentional with the scheduling. So I like it. I like the way it sets up. The first weekend, even though we're playing in a dome, you have three regional teams there, UNI, South Dakota State, who's very good and probably underrated by a lot of people. We were fortunate enough to play them on opening day and win last year. And I think they only lost 9 or 10 games last year. And then, Nebraska's in that tournament. So right off the bat, even though it's indoors, we're starting off pretty tough. Then the next weekend at New Mexico State, and then go to Mary Nutter. And then that sets us up for the three weeks going into our Big 12 conference schedule. So I like the way it's set up. Obviously we're going to have to take care of business and win some of those games. But I like where we're positioned from a schedule standpoint.
Yeah, you talk about unseating Oklahoma. I think the SEC did that for you. They just they decided, like, we'll take that out of your hair in a few years here. Take them in Texas and maybe.
Yeah, it's that's like we were talking before you came on air. It's the landscape has changed, and you just kind of roll with the punches. And although we don't want to lose those two schools, it's happening. But I feel like we're picking up three really good schools coming in with UCF, Houston, and BYU. So I think it's still going to be a very competitive conference once they depart they would depart in 25. So 26 might be the first season. So, it's just like I was getting asked questions about OU and Texas leaving. I was talking to, I forgot who I was speaking with. I think it was Justin's World. And I just said that, Iowa State's going to have a softball program, whether it's with OU or Texas or without. And I think we landed in a pretty good spot with those three programs because traditionally they're really good.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of dizzying, the pace, like the dominoes that start to fall. So everyone's going to have to recalibrate and figure out, okay, who's where? And like, once we get to 2025, 26, so.
I've lost track of that.
I know. I'm starting to. I kind of, some of them I'm like, wow, Sun Belt, like, is there going to be Conference USA pretty soon? Like, it's all these things. I'm just like, whoa, this is too much. But But we'll try to get you on this. We try to keep, you know, somewhat theme, you know, we're heading towards Christmas here. So I've been asking some coaches, best Christmas gift you've received and the best you've given.
Oh, wow. Best, I think, you know, you have to start thinking back to childhood and everything. I remember probably the favorite thing, probably memory I remember is that my mom and dad, I'm a big Chiefs fan, and we lived in Kansas City in my brainwashing, sports brainwashing years. So I'm a Royals and Chiefs fan. And I remember my dad or opened a package. My mom and dad had gotten me a Chiefs helmet and a Chiefs uniform with 89, which was Otis Taylor back then. So for all those people out there that think my tweets and everything, I'm a bandwagon fan. I my dad used to be able to tell me I could sit and he could call out a number and I could tell you what Chief wore that number. And just like 14 Ed Podolak, 86 Buck Buchanan, 61 Curly Culp, who just passed away. So you could go through that and I could give numbers. So I'm not a bandwagon Chief fan. So that was probably one of the most memorable things. I mean, when it comes to giving, I don't know, you know, obviously try to pass along help to my, my daughter that's married now. And, you know, our parents and my wife's parents have helped us over the years, but I think probably one of the best gifts obviously was the help with the, you know, down payment of my daughter's first home. So, not necessarily a Christmas present, but it was in October, but just to be able to see that and see their faces and how proud they were of their first home. I'm definitely in a different portion of my life. the only thing that's left now is grandkids.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the fun gifts. You know, you'll get to spoil them. I know that's my parents have taken to that very well, very well. But I appreciate it. That's great. And last one, just any big family Christmas traditions that you guys do or anything you need?
You know, obviously when you get married, the thing that we try to do is we kind of got off schedule this year because my dad passed away in July. So we usually like do Thanksgiving at my wife's family and then Christmas at mine. And then the next year it flops. But with this being first Christmas without my father, obviously my mom's a widow. So we kind of flop that. We're going to go down. But the tradition is you usually just go to flip that and spend time with other families. I'm looking forward to getting down there and seeing my sisters and you know, kind of having good memories of my dad and just getting in and checking to make sure mom's okay and everything. So that's not a good tradition to have, but the tradition is probably, you know, just making sure each year we spend time with our family, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas. So you don't ever know. And the realization came this summer. You don't ever know when it's going to be the last one. So definitely take note of that to all the listeners out there. Hug your loved ones and tell them you love them. So I think that's probably one of the most valuable things that I've learned in the last, you know, year to 18 months.
Well, that is a perfect way to end that. And I totally agree. I think that's if we've learned anything these last few years, even that's, you know, even more is just to savor all the, you know, be grateful for what you have and don't let a time pass where you don't tell people how much they mean to you. So
absolutely. And I think that's how we've been successful. I have to give a lot of credit to my associate head coaches. We have kind of a family setting here. And I think everyone says that, but we try to take note and even tell our players that every day and kind of live by it. And I think that's a big reason the success that we have. I think players have bought in and they believe in that culture themselves. And it's amazing. You can get a lot more out of people with sugar than vinegar. Definitely can't coach the way I was coached or the way I started my career to now, because these players are smarter. The technology is there. Information's there, and they've made reason why I still have a passion for it is they make me better every day, and that's what makes the sport fun.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today in the D1 Softball Podcast. We standing invitation to come back anytime you want. We're very excited to see how this 2022 season goes. And I know you'll be in some places that your team probably is. So hopefully we can watch in person. And again, hopefully have you on once the season does start to hear more about the team.
I appreciate it. Appreciate the time. And anytime you want me back on, let me on. I have a gift of gab, if you didn't notice. So sometimes you have to tell me to shut up. So, but thanks for what you all do for the sport. I think what's happening from social media and podcasts and everything, and it is helping growing the sport, and with everything that's going on with ESPN and ESPN Plus, our sport's in a good spot, and hopefully we can continue to grow it.
Jamie Pinkerton, Iowa State, great to have him on. He is, I know we keep saying this, but I could talk to all these head coaches all the time. He's a great human being and just fun to chat with.
Yeah, just learning some of their backgrounds is always fascinating to me. Like, you know, he started in Coca-Cola, he was a salesman, and then, you know, got his start because his sister was, you know, she was the first ever signee at Tulsa, and they didn't have a team. So they like built a team around her, and he's like, I'll coach. And then, you know, realized he had a passion for it and was then a sports info intern at Tulsa. And then that's how it's launched. So it's so interesting to hear how these people kind of make their way into the sport, and just, you can see that he has a passion for it, and you wouldn't do that if you didn't. So we need, you know, guys like him in the sport are great, and really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah. And it's, you know, losing Sammy Williams would be hard for anybody, but just love what he had to say about her as not a human being and a person. And now we had her on the pod, but now she's actually working for, was it the Cubs?
She's Major League Baseball. Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought she was in Boeing when we interviewed her. So,
right.
You know, like, it's like, that's pretty first world problems there. That's pretty awesome. But she's recovering now. I remember she tore ACL in AU, which is a bummer, but,
Yeah,
I didn't know that was, it doesn't surprise me. I would, you know, but good fallback plan if you got Boeing is kind of like a fallback option. So,
well, that's it for the week. Anything you're looking forward to for Christmas? Anything you're looking for under your tree?
No, not me personally. I'm, I kind of live vicariously through my brother, my nieces and nephew. So always love just being around them when I can and seeing their, because they're young enough to still be, you know, in that wonder stage of it. So it's really fun to see them and kind of, you know, see their reaction to things, and just really looking forward to that most of the anything. I don't need anything. I'm kind of at the age of the socks, and, you know, you get socks from your parents still. My parents, God bless them, get socks or something every year, but. Now, how about you? You any big traditions, any fun things you got planned with Christmas holiday coming up?
Yeah, well, the Henry family, we do big Italian food dinner on Christmas Eve. And it's kind of same thing. Got my nephew. He's the one that's probably the most fun to, you know, buy for. And just being around family and friends. I was overseas for a while, so just being around, I think the family is probably the number one thing for me. And yeah, not really looking forward to any, you know, gifts or anything other than probably giving gifts, or probably, you know, you and I think are similar in that vein, whether it's other people or you know, but buying a coffee to the person behind you in the drive-thru. I did that yesterday. Oh, that's always really fun.
For you. Look at your kind heart.
Yeah, I know. Just, nothing big, but just wishing everybody happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa. Is there anything I'm missing?
Well, there's the Festivus for Seinfeld. Do we celebrate that with the, you know, if you're a Seinfeld watcher? That qualifies too, right? Happy Festivus, you know?
Happy Festivus at Calvary's too. So head on over to d1softball.com, like, subscribe. You can now get us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. You can download the podcast directly from the website as well on d1softball.com. And that's it for the week. Reed, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Again, just cherish the, you know, I love, you know, Merry Christmas to all our listeners out there too. We really appreciate it. It's been awesome to see the kind of the village and that we've established at D1 softball, and just the awesome people that subscribe and that listen. And we're really grateful for everyone. And we hope that you get to spend some time with family and friends, or however you celebrate. We hope that you get that time and cherish it. Cause I think sometimes we get so wrapped up and busy in our lives, and just take some time to kind of just realize that how grateful we are just to be here. Like, don't have to have anything like materialistic wise, but just be able to, you know, savor just the family, friends, and just being alive. So it's just, I wish everyone out there happy holidays, however you celebrate it.
Very well said. Thanks, Ree. That's it from us, the D1 Softball Podcast. We'll see you next week before, well, it'll be the last pod of the year for us for 2021. See you all.
Year in review.